The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Hello and welcome to the GAA Hour brought to you by AIB. No Willie this week, get over it. We've got Johnny Buckley and we've got Paul Kerrigan come up on the show instead. No mention of Laois Minors, no talk of Port Laois. It's a Willie free zone today. It's myself and Connor Heenahan here. Connor, what the hell is going on in Mayo? Like, would you get straight onto it? Because I've been hearing Lee Keegan rumours for the last 3 weeks and getting worse and worse every time I hear them. What, can you clear anything up for us?
It's a good job. Lee did a sit-down interview with Mike Finnerty in the Mayo News this week, and it's a good job he did, because the rumours that you heard, and you would have heard them from outside the county, so you can imagine what they were like inside the county for the last 3 weeks. So it's a good job that he kind of put them to bed. So I think everybody will kind of have an idea of the story that so Lee did the interview because there was rumours going around that he had MS. So the thing about it is that this rumour seemed to start when Lee Keegan missed the replay of the Roscommon game earlier on in the summer. He was hospitalised for a few nights before that game with cellulitis. So because Mayo went on to play the semi-final, the final, and kind of died down a bit after that. But since that, Lee ruled himself out of the international rules. So there was kind of speculation, oh, is there something wrong? And it leads back to this MS rumour again. It was really picking up pace. So yeah, this week he sat down with Mike Finnerty, explained that he was very upset by the rumours for a start, because people, you know, Mayo's a small county. Lee Keegan is one of the biggest names in the county. Yep. People were asking his family about it. They were getting upset. He made a good point as well that, like, it wasn't fair on people who have MS to have it thrown around, you know, with no basis in fact whatsoever. So the only thing, as Lee clarified this week, is that he will be missing some next season, but it's because he's had keyhole operations on two of his hips. So he'll be out for the guts of 5-6 months. But as regards MS or nothing like that, there's no basis, and he's 100% perfectly healthy.
And, like, you know, MS was one rumour I heard. It got worse and worse. Like, here's some of the stuff that you heard. And you say Mayo's a small county. Like, the first I heard of it was a few weeks ago, and someone texted me saying they're in Westport. So if Mayo's a small county, imagine what a small town Westport is. And they said that's all anyone was talking about. They were just in a stag do, going bar to bar, everyone telling them, did you hear about Lee Keegan?
Yeah, and the worst thing is that, like, when these rumours spread, and even though people only hear them, they hear them secondhand, they hear them thirdhand, and it might hear them worse than that. But they present them, like, some people have a way of presenting rumours so convincingly that it gets out as fact. And that's what, if you talk to anyone in Mayo, like, it's like, did you hear about Lee Keegan? And it wasn't like it's not a rumour anymore. It was like that it was actually true, you know? So, it's great that he's put them to bed, but I suppose it's a disturbing kind of realization of how these things can get out and spread so easily.
Well, he said in the Mayo News, as you said, I definitely confirm that I did not have MS, which is a very serious condition and something that really shouldn't be discussed in the manner that it has been. I'm 100% fine and healthy, and thankfully have no illness like that. I was disappointed to see my family upset by the rumours, and it's not nice for people who do have MS for my name to be thrown around in conversations like that with false rumours. So yeah, it's like, listen, it's great for him. It isn't very nice, on anyone who is affected by this, anyone who was affected by the rumours. But it's great for him, and it's good for, like, being so cynical about it as well. You're thinking, geez, like, that's, if you're looking at it from a sports point of view, like, that's bad for Mayo, like, if Lee Keegan's out. So how long is he going to be out for?
It looks like, well, he, after discussions with his consultant, he said about 5 to 6 months. So if you're thinking it's November now, he's had the operations already, so you're looking at probably March, April. But to be honest, Lee Keegan missing a chunk of the league isn't a big deal as far as I'm concerned, because he's played so much football. I think he could probably do with a rest. And, like, hip injuries, you know, by their nature come from wear and tear, and it's probably no surprise, because since the All-Ireland final in 2016, he went straight in to beat my own club in the Mayo County final. They went on, they won the All-Ireland.
Get over it.
I'm sorry. 6 days after they won the All-Ireland, he was back. He came on as a sub for Mayo against Roscommon. And I think the following week he started against Dublin. And apart from the Roscommon game, the second Roscommon game, I don't think he missed a game for the season. So yeah, him missing, like, you know, Mayo's history of the league is kind of checkered, as in because of the training situation with a lot of players based in Dublin, we've kind of just struggled to kind of stay up the last few years. I think that'll be the same again this year. But as long as they do, I don't think we're going to miss Lee Keegan too much.
Yeah, and that's it's a nice segue into the next topic, because Dick Clerkin has been out during the weekend, and he was really giving off stink about no Dublin players in international roles. And it, when you look at an example like Lee Keegan, and you, as you said, they're playing international roles 2015. Went on to win the All-Ireland 2016 and 2017, played the whole season all the way to an All-Ireland final. Like, this happens with players, and they need a break somewhere. They need to get their hips fixed. They need to recover somewhere. In Dublin's case, a lot of the players then need to squeeze in their club championship at the end of, like, September, October. So it wasn't possible for a lot of them to go on to. But anyway, Dick Clerkin and Wooly, actually, I'm actually raging Wooly's not here. I was, as a fan, I was looking forward to the podcast this week, because they had a little Twitter spat that ended with Wooly getting blocked by Dick Clerkin.
Got a word in edgeways, but that's that was no big deal.
But Dick Clerkin was on the show one time, and him and Wooly had a great debate, but obviously they haven't been too friendly since then, I can only assume. But yeah, anyway, Dick was talking about, he's had a column coming in the Irish Independent on Monday. And Wooly was saying something like, "Well, I hope it's more interesting than your tweets or whatever." Yeah, Wooly's not one to let anything go on Twitter. So you get onto it, back and forward. Wooly got blocked. Dick continued talking to some of the Dublin players, but actually, they did have a little bite at Wooly as well about where we're at here, SportsU. He said, "Shouldn't you be busy blogging the five things we learned about the International Rules Series for Connor.ie?" You know, so Connor.ie, obviously a dig that we like to write about the best MMA fighter in the world a lot. But the interesting that he, obviously for his own outlet, the Irish Independent, he missed 6 days just before that. Their headline from the International Rules as well: five things we learned from Ireland's 63-53 defeat in the first International Rules test against the Aussies. But anyway, that's my own gripe.
Wasn't about Conor McGregor, so.
Yeah, but the point was, so he did release this column anyway on Monday, I'd say against better judgment, because it seemed like he had made his mind up to write this column before some people came back and gave him good advice, but he continued anyway. He was querying why there were no Dublin players on the International Rules squad. And he wrote, "Dublin supporters and some players have taken exception to my suggestion of a snub on their part towards the International Rules Series. While their defence has been forthright, the evidence against it is damning." The evidence, you ask? Connor?
Yeah.
The evidence
is the evidence, Connor?
Kieran Whelan openly expressed his disappointment on air that nobody from his county was represented on the panel. Read into that what you will. That's the evidence. Like, you read the whole article,
case
there's
closed.
Nothing else. Yeah, there's plenty of question marks. It's him asking questions, not really finding any answers. But the evidence is that Kieran Whelan was disappointed that there were no Dublin players. Of course Kieran Whelan's disappointed there's no Dublin players. I was disappointed there's no Derry players, but it's for very different reasons.
Of course, yeah.
You know,
course.
But like, it's not really a basis to put an article on. So it carries on. It says, "On the evidence of what we saw this year, the Aussies have started to take the series more seriously again." I mean, very convenient that there wasn't one mention of the 2017 Grand Final winners, Richmond, not having any representatives either, the same way that Dublin didn't have any representatives.
And just to segue there, in the week leading up to the game as well, there was rumours that clubs were thinking of pulling players from it altogether, because I think it was Scott Pendlebury and Pierce Handy had got injured. So it was like, oh, we don't want this happening anymore. So there's rumours that they might be actually very reluctant to let their players go in future.
Yeah.
But
and on the same show where Kieran Whelan expressed openly his disappointment, Sean Kavanagh was sitting beside him, and he said, it's on the Sunday game, "I was part of the initial panel that was to go to Australia and play. I was part of the WhatsApp group, and the Dublin players were there, and they were posting that they couldn't make training on Friday night, couldn't make training on Saturday morning, and that just boils down to one thing, the GAA calendar." I mean, like, that's it. Like, it's very tough for, like, there's a lot of those players. Like, Ballymun and Vincent's would have had a good chunk of those players who were playing right into October, playing in a county final. Some of them were recovering from injuries. Jack McCaffrey, who we'll talk about in a minute, he's playing with UCD the whole way through, recovering from injury himself. Then he'd been asked to go to Australia for 2 weeks and play in this. Like, it's different. Like, there are different circumstances for each one.
You might get on to what Jack McCaffrey kind of said back to Dick Clerkin in a couple of minutes, but I just had a look back at, because the main thing to consider here as well is that, like, not every Dublin player would have been invited to play in the first place, right? So I just went back and had a look at the Dublin players that were on the panel in 2015, who were probably the most likely to be invited again, you know, 2 years on. So Fleming McMahon was involved in Ballymun right up to the county final. Jack McCaffrey, he's a cruciate knee ligament injury. Rory O'Carroll is out of the country. Jeremy Connolly is involved with Vincent's up until last week. And then players who might have played then, you're looking at Paul Mannion, who I'm pretty sure Sean Gavin has said was at the original trials.
Yeah.
Brian Fenton, who recently set his new job. Conor Callan, maybe, who's playing with Coola still in the Leinster Hurling. And James McCarthy, who was involved with Ballymun up until the the Dublin Club final. So that's, I think that's about eight players. And that's kind of off the top of my head. There's probably another bunch of players that there are reasons for. So it's just like, like so many of these players have legitimate excuses that I don't know. I think, as you said, that I think Dick had it in his mind to write the column, but didn't kind of maybe look into this before actually going ahead and writing it.
I genuinely think that's what it is. Like, and there's no, it seems that he thinks there was like a directive for Dublin not to go play the international rules, even though they won't be playing again until January. Yeah. But it definitely doesn't seem like the case. And then, yeah, like the Jack McCaffrey things we talk about, Dick continues amidst all the social media crossfire, because he was getting plenty of it, not just from Woolley. I simply asked Jack McCaffrey, was he okay with Dublin not being represented in Australia? He continues to write, perfectly okay was his response. A disappointing, if unsurprising, reply. That, like, you know, that's very cheeky for one. It's very unfair, and it's completely and totally unethical as a journalist, is what he is, because he's writing this column, because those were two words of 94 words which Jack McCaffrey wrote back to him, and Jack actually went on to explain some of the situation, which would have been very helpful for Dick's column.
Jack said
perfectly okay. Yeah, that was the first two words of it. It's not as if a blanket invitation was given to any Dublin players who fancied a shot. None that were asked were available. I'm sure some of the lads who would have loved to play, sorry, I'm sure some of the lads would have loved to play, so boys who weren't asked. He also said, get over it. Like, you know, so that actually takes it on an order. Who wasn't asked? Because, like, Dublin are obviously an amazing team, so I want to know, like, who was asked and who wasn't asked. Like, you know, you could have asked 17 Dublin players, and they might be useful for you. But it also continued because James McCarthy also wrote back to Dick Clerk and just saying, do some research. And Dick was saying, I have done some research, and he pointed out that some of the Dublin players were playing in Boston for the Fenway Classic thing last week. But Jack came back at him again saying, you don't need to train for a trip to Boston. You'll have to forgive some lads for trying to give something to their clubs at the tail end of the season. Comparing a weekend away with maybe one or two days off work with a 2 week spin to Australia isn't exactly like for like either. Yeah, so like Jack really helped him out there and said, like, not everybody was asked. People who weren't asked might have wanted to play. People who were asked weren't available to play, himself being injured, of course. But then, as it's like, the piece was already programmed, it was going to go out, and just got more question marks. Is it really credible to suggest that no one of the Dublin's exalted panel of players could have made the trip to Australia? Not one. I struggle to believe that Joe Kiernan and his management team didn't make every effort to avoid a potential Dublin no-show. I mean, it's just like, it's just question marks, and very like, I don't know if it's dangerous or not, but it certainly misrepresents Jack McCaffrey, for one.
Absolutely.
And doesn't really get to the crux of anything, because don't forget, this whole thing is based on Kieran Whelan saying he was disappointed.
Yeah, yeah. 100%. And with that 94-word reply from Jack McCaffrey, that should have stopped Dick Clerkin in his tracks immediately. And that's before you get into the point at all, that there's no player in Ireland is incumbent to, there's no obligation on them to play international rules. You know, that's something to point out straight away. I mean, like, he could have gone back and referenced the Gooch, who openly admitted that he played one test and had no interest in playing it.
Completely different game as well. You know,
completely. Yeah, and yeah, McCaffrey just mentioned like three bullet points. I would say, like, club commitments, work commitments, and the fact that the Dublin team weren't extended a blanket invitation. But yet, towards the end of the column, Dick Clerkin still goes on about this damaging perceptions about the Dublin team, but he seems to be amongst a minority that think it's in any way damaging to Dublin at all.
Justice for Dublin. That's right. You don't hear that often on this podcast. anyway, sorry, we'll move on, because a couple of management teams have been getting a few new faces in, a couple of famous faces. Stephen O'Neill is said to be joining the Tyrone panel, or the Tyrone management team. Stephen O'Neill is back with Tyrone. He's only 37. He could be back with Tyrone. He's still playing with Clandegale. Apparently he played midfield for them last year, and he's said to be coming on for another year for them as well this year. Or 2018, so like, I'm sure he's still a classy little fecker. But he's obviously won three All-Irelands with Tyrone. He's going to join Mickey Hart, Gavin Devlin, Peter Donnelly in that management team. Maybe they're looking for a fresh attacking voice to.
I'm not aware of any management or coaching credentials that he has, but because he's still playing, he's probably still not managing at club level or anything. But as you said, I think it could be acknowledged by Mickey Hart of the need to be more sophisticated in attack, and we've talked about it a lot, especially when you come up, when Tyrone come up against the big teams, their game plan has been shown to be lacking a bit. And if you're a Tyrone forward, is there anyone from the last 20 years that you'd want to learn from, maybe apart from Peter Canavan?
Brian McGuigan, there's plenty of forwards.
Yeah, Stephen O'Neill was up there.
Yeah,
Definitely is the I want to say classiest. I don't know, can you say classiest against him considering his company? But
yeah,
my god, like, even if it's just to teach out, execute the best solo dummy ever and make mugs out of defenders repeatedly. But yeah, I think it's a good move for Tyrone. Yeah,
but it's that thing though, like, boys like that just immediately command respect. Like when Stephen O'Neill standing in changing room, like the young boys especially, now with Sean Cavanagh going as well, they're going to need that figure again. That's just like, Jesus, there's Stephen O'Neill. I grew up idolising this boy. When he talks, even if it's not, if it's complete nonsense, but like people listen and they try to pull out something, they want it to be great because it's Stephen O'Neill saying it to them. And I also think with forwards like that, when you bring them into management teams, they just have this bit more assurance or arrogance almost. And because I always want your forwards to be, should have a bit of arrogance about them. They should believe that when they have the ball, they're going to win the game for you. And it's only from having the best forwards in those management teams that you can actually get that across. You, me, Mickey Hart, no, like you, we're not going to teach forwards to you know, just be brilliant. It's that Jose Mourinho stuff, just go out and win the game. But you need someone like Stephen O'Neill there just sort of filling their heads with, like, this is possible, like, I've done it and I'm going to tell you how to do it.
Yeah, definitely. He always struck me as a leader, Stephen O'Neill, as well. When he was playing for Tyrone, I remember, like, some of the battles with when he used to be centre forward and Kieran McGeaney used to be centre back. And, like, you know, it took a big man to be able to take on Kieran McGeaney at that stage when he was at his pomp, but, like, he was well able for him. So, yeah, I mean, if you're Mark Bradley, Peter Hart, the other lads in the Tyrone
forwards on the bench,
nominal forwards, I think they're going to learn so much from next year.
Yeah, but like, you have, we always talk about Lee Brennan and we're talking about him coming to the fore, but you have McCalliskey to come back, Ronan O'Neill. There are forwards there maybe just not being used enough just yet. Also Cavan under 20s have gotten a boost with Marty Clark, the down legends. Cougar down, is it?
Of certainly the most recent generation.
Yeah.
I mean, he inspired them to the All-Ireland in 2010, so yeah.
I mean, like, Marty Clark's story is pretty, it's very sad. Like, you know, he's only 30 years of age. He's obviously retired at the start of this year with Addison's disease. Like, he won an All-Ireland minor title with Down before he took him to the final, the senior team, went to Australia, came back, he was as good as everyone expected him to be. I actually just look at this and think it's great for him now that he's getting his first coaching role. He's coming in with Cavan under 20s into the management team. I don't understand how Down have let this happen. Like, you have this again, this the biggest name for that age group in the county. Like, you talk, I played in college with some Down under 20s or sorry, Down minors who won that All Ireland, and they always say that Marty Clark is the reason they won the All Ireland. I know they had a great team, but he was the figurehead of that team.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand how this man who's so revered almost in the county, especially amongst that generation, can be let go and just go manage or be part of the Cavan under.
Unless he's only available this year and there's existing management setups in Down that he can't get into, because you'd imagine they'd want to tap into, well, not just what he's done for Down, but like just his experience of professional sports in Australia because as far as I know, I think he studied a diploma in sports and management when he was in Australia as well. It was kind of sad, like the way Marty Clark's career panned out, because God, when he came back in 2010, he was outstanding. And I remember being in Australia during his first spell at Collingwood. So that would have been around 2008, 2009. And he was a superstar. He was like, when you think of kind of Irish people who have done well in international rules, Tyke Nelly is inevitably the first name probably going to come to mind. But Marty Clark was definitely, and he was playing for, like, I remember Collingwood were kind of like the Man United of AFL at the time. You either loved them or you hated them, but probably the biggest supporter club in Melbourne. He was a superstar for them. It didn't really work out when he went back because he started to come down with Addison's disease. But he's I think he's done a bit of coaching with Ty Kennelly at the AFL combines as well. So it's a pity, like, he's still only 30.
Yeah.
You know, and having that career behind him. So it's a pity he's still not playing, but this could be the start of a long coaching career for him. Good luck to him.
It's such a coup for Cavan. Like, and I still think it's a bit of a loss for Down, because not only does he have that sort of backing behind him as a player, a successful player, a very good one, but then his experience in professionalism, as you said, he has that education behind him. Like, this really could be the start of something great. And just to double up, like, all the best, Marty. On Monday, RT1, 9:35 p.m. there's an All Ireland behind the scenes documentary called The Blue Sisters. It's the Dublin ladies football team, the All Ireland champions, who beat Mayo along the way.
Who didn't?
Yeah, so Loose Horse, they recorded it all. They had footage from behind the scenes, sort of like changing room talks, training fields. Pat Comer, the director of A Year Till Sunday, that famous Galway one, he's directing this one as well. Like, so it should be good. You look at that AAB one that went out recently,
Behind
the Gates of Roscommon. Like, that was class.
The appetite is absolutely there, and it's good to see that kind of the walls are coming down slightly on access to kind of behind the scenes in the GAA. Like, I'm sure there's some elements of kind of tactical preparation that we won't get an insight into, but even to get a look at training and kind of dress room scenes is like you could see, as I said, that the appetite was there for us common one. And you mentioned Pat Comer. I think it was made for the 98 winning team, but it's still the best. And I say this as a Mayo man and neighbouring with Galway, obviously, but it's still the best GAA documentary that has been made. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
I think you can actually get a lot of it on YouTube. I watched it not too long ago. So that, along with Marooned, the Paddy O'Shea one, I'd say they're the two best. So yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah, and like, it's funny you say about the training and getting insights into that. Straight away, what I looked at, I was like, I wonder, will Noel Healy's speed program be written down there?
Right.
I'm always interested to find out what are you eating, or what are you doing to get yourself faster. I was with Paul Kerrigan, who's coming up later in the show, and it took everything I had not to ask him about speed drills and all this. But that was the first thing I wrote down. Sinead Ahern, obviously the captain, scored 9 points in the final. There's a lot of stuff there to interest. Sarah McCaffrey coming off the bench, scoring 2 goals in that final. That relationship with Jack, who was there going mad during the final.
It's good. It'll be there for 3 years though as well, because the Dublin went from having lost a couple of finals then to having a win one yesterday. So the contrasting, let's say, emotions between what it was like to lose one and then to win one this year. I think one of them described it as, you know, losing the final has been like a breakup. I think we mentioned it earlier on in a few podcasts ago. So I know it'll be really interesting.
Yeah, it's Monday, 9:35 p.m. on RTE1. More Dublin news. Bernard Brugan is staying on for another season. He's out at the Asia Games. Wasn't invited on the international rules panel, I can only imagine. Out in Bangkok, and speaking to the Irish Independent, he said, "Throughout the summer, I wasn't sure what I'd do. I had some good form and bad form, and I was only getting so much game time, so I was thinking, will I give it another go, or is this my time gone? And I was rolling that around in my head. I sat down with Jim and said that I felt, said what I felt and where I thought I was at. After I had my say, Jim indicated that he wanted me around and wanted me back, and there was a role for me." So Bernard Brugan is staying on. He's won five All-Irelands. It's getting hard to count now. It's like, funny boys like him, like, I know this year he was a bit more of a bit part player, but almost like Andy Moore. Now, I know Andy Moore's on a completely different trajectory at the minute, but like, there's always talk about retirement because of their age, but can you not wait until you're bad and then retire? Like,
yeah,
you
exactly.
Know, Bernard Brugan is still very useful. He's still Dublin's top 10 forward, so he should be there. Like, and he's also has more experience and more gift of the gab to give anybody.
Yeah, I thought he'd go though, because because of the limited amount of game time he got in the biggest games for Dublin this year. He didn't even come on against Tyrone in the All-Ireland semi-final, if I'm not mistaken. He didn't get that much game time against Mayo in the final. So I'm not saying that Bernard Brogan should go because he's 33 and past it. He's absolutely not. I mean, came on against Kildare, I think, this year and like gave an exhibition. But just because there's so much competition in that Dublin forward line, and the fact that he has won 5 All-Irelands, I thought he might be kind of content with his lot and mightn't fancy, you know, going through pre-season and all that. But it was interesting what he said, is that, you know, because there's so much competition with Dublin, I think a lot of forwards, unless you're Jim McConnelly or unless you're kind of one of the more established lads in the forward line now, you have to be kind of content with maybe half an hour here or, you know, 40 minutes there. But he said that he's better when he gets a continued run of games. He got a few injuries in the league this year, so he's only kind of getting little bits here and there. So I would imagine that if he was happy with what Jim Gavin told him, I'd say Jim Gavin indicated that he's going to give him, as long as he's fit, an established run in the league next year. So if he gets that, and if Bernard Brogan thinks that's when he's best, don't rule him out having the big championship 2018.
It's tough for Jim Gavin to make those promises as well though, isn't it? Like, he's in a position where he doesn't need to bring Jim McConnelly on against Tyrone either. He did need to bring him on in the final, but only for half of it. Like, it's such a, I don't know how you can make promises to any of these players. It's like, well, let's see who's come next year as well for us.
Like, yeah, maybe Connor he did Callum. But he said that throughout the whole year he wasn't sure what he was going to do, and then after having a conversation with Jim Gavin that he's, you know, he's happy enough to stay on. I'm not saying that Jim Gavin told him, you know, oh, we're going to start you in every game of the league. Yeah. But I'd say he gave him a fairly decent guarantee that if you're fit, we'll give you plenty of game time during the league, which he probably didn't get this year, and then wasn't starting in the championship as a result and had to make an impact, you know, from the bench, which, you know, he did. But like he'll always prefer Asmos Farr as well to, you know, start and make an impact there.
Yeah, he said he Jim has a role for him anyway. But I remember talking to him after last year's final, and you know, he never played minors, got overlooked. I actually went and tried out for the hurlers then and stuff because he didn't make the football team. When he did get onto the Dublin senior team, he didn't actually break through until he was like 23 or something like that. And then it's incredible now when you look at his last 10 years or whatever, what he's done. But something like that always makes me think, or make me wonder, is that why he'll stay on a little bit more? Because sort of making up for last time when he was a bit younger, that it took him a bit longer to break onto the scene.
Like Andy Moran wasn't an underage superstar either. He didn't really start making his impact till under 21, so that's a decent point. And actually, in both their cases, they didn't discover what they're best at until in Andy's case, I'd say way later in his career. But Bernard Brogan was kind of a hard-working half-forward when he first came onto the scene. You know, it wasn't till, I think, when he got Footballer of the Year, that he discovered that he's far better when he's like an inside forward and just kind of taking chances rather than doing all his work off the field. So, no, you might have a point there because, you know, like the fellas that retire at 32, 33 were, you know, a lot of them were probably underage superstars for years first, but whereas in Bernard and Andy's case, it took them a while longer to make an impression.
I think I'm always cautious as well of this whole, like, you know, give the young lads a chance. We need to play young boys and prepare for the future. Like, it comes from, like, I'm so paranoid about Wes Hoolahan retiring from the Republic from the Republic soccer team. Like, I always say you're developing young players to get them at their peak. You know, so the reason that you're investing in these young players is that you get the finished product. And even if Bernard Brogan's 33, even if Wes Hoolahan's 36, the finished product is there now and it's better than the young players, and you've developed them for a reason and invested in them in that time. So Bernard Brogan now, even if he's past his best, is still one of the best. So use him, keep developing the young boys, but you have him now as a finished article. Then when he's not the finished article anymore, or when he is finished, then you bring in the lads who are the finished article. If you keep looking to the future, you'll never have the finished article. You'll always have young lads.
Yeah.
But some young lads are just brilliant as well, like Conor Killian.
That's true, yeah. Well, we'd probably take that side because of our own age. But I suppose the argument on the other side is that if you don't give them time, you know, to develop early, that it's not going to happen for them at all. But no, I'd be firmly agreed with you that, like, if they're not good to, if some young fella isn't good enough to replace a 34-year-old Andy Moran or a 32-year-old Bernard Brogan, then don't be playing them just for the sake of how old they are or how young they are.
All right, coming up, Johnny Buckley.
When your legs don't work like they used to before.
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning and I had the podcast on from Newbridge, Southern 8, and that helps the journey, to be honest, if I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs. Depends on mood I'm in. Ed's good for, if you're in a sloppy mood, Ed's good to sing along to, and then if you're in a GA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on.
Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70.
Right, Johnny, thanks for joining us. Tell me, what was it like being captain for the year?
It was great, I suppose. It was a great honour. You know, I suppose it didn't pan out in the end as we'd hoped, but no, it was a really enjoyable year. You know, it was a great honour, something we've always kind of wanted to do, so to get the opportunity was great.
Did you find it different at all? Like, how did you approach coming into the squad and being captain now?
I didn't mind it really. I suppose I've been around there a few years, and well used to the setup and stuff. And it's funny, you know. It's kind of a captaincy by title really. When you're in that dressing room, you know, it's kind of every fella. There's plenty of leaders around the place, so there's no more onus on you to, or any more pressure on you or anything like that. So it's just kind of an enjoyable role really.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about the pressure, because you look back at some of the names that Captain Kerry and like Kieran Donaghy and Sheehan just before you. I mean, again, was there any more weight on your shoulder? Did you feel like you had to act a little differently when you went in?
Not really, I suppose. You know, you say a couple of words, but probably be doing stuff like that anyway. And as I say, there's... Unlike in different teams, maybe you would have played with before, there's kind of an onus that the captain does X, Y, and Z, whereas below it's just kind of, if a fella's something to say, he says it, and there are them leaders around the place and the fellas that have been there for years, so it's they take a lot of the slack as well and do a lot of the talking.
And how would it work now this year in Kerry? Obviously, Crooks are champions again. Like, is that decided amongst yourselves, and when is it decided who's going to be captain for 2018?
I suppose there's nothing decided yet. It's kind of the inter-county season hasn't kicked back in fully yet, so it'll be another while. I suppose we'll see how this this weekend goes, and if that all goes well, then we'll probably sit down with the club and with the management and see what we'll do.
But it's a club decision, and you put forward the captain, and that's how it works.
Yeah, that's how it works. So I suppose the players involved will sit down with the club representatives and just have a general discussion, and from that decision, then that'll be passed on to the county board, and that then needs to be ratified. But you know, it's all kind of, there's a bit of formalities about it, but it's whoever the club decides really just goes on to do it.
I hadn't planned to talk about captaincy this much, but I just find it interesting from the outside. Like, do you think it is a process that works better with like electing the captain from the county champion?
There's good and bad in it, I suppose. It's worked well over the years. Any team that wins the county championship will have a couple of players involved, it just, one of them goes forward to represent it. So there's pros and cons in both methods, but this one seems to be working well.
You must have just been happy to be playing last year after it was 2016 was a bit of a nightmare for you. You had that problem with your knee, did
yeah.
you?
Yeah, it was great. As I said, I got an operation in April 2015, so I was kind of chasing my tail for the season. So it was great to be back involved this year and actually getting out onto the field.
And how did that work? What stage did you come back and think? Because obviously then it was a bit of a nightmare. You had to keep playing with Crooks, and then you had to sort of set your path out to get back with Kerry full time. How did that work with Crooks going on for so long?
I suppose when you're in the Crooks after Christmas, you're on the serious business end of stuff. So the Kerry management were great and just allowed us the lads involved to focus on Crooks. So when that finished, then again the knee was still kind of niggling a bit. So I sat down with the physio team and the management and just said that there was an opportunity to get a block of work in, block of prehab work to strengthen up the knee and get it ready for the championship season. So that was very much the focus for all of April and a lot of May last year, and then getting back up to championship pace come the end of May, and played in for the summer. So in fairness, everyone was great, but both the kind of medical setup and the management allowed me to do that, so it was much appreciated.
So you got to claim the Hogan Stand steps in March. Were you even thinking about trying to get back to, I suppose, a Munster final now? I mean, it's such a long journey, but it just keeps going. Is that something now that is an expectation in your camp?
Not so much, I suppose. Over the years, like looking back in the past 10 years, maybe we would have got to a lot of All-Ireland semi-finals and maybe won Munsters and stuff, and I suppose you kind of learn year after year. So very much the focus over the past couple of years has been one step at a time kind of thing. So there's a seriously competitive county championship down in Kerry that you play a lot of knockout games and that, so each one of them are serious games, and then you go on to Munster. So for us, it's very much this weekend, focus on this weekend and trying to get over that one, and there's no fella really looking beyond that.
Is it true that Crooks have a developed style throughout underage and everyone plays the same way going up into senior?
It's I don't think it's as rigid as that, but what you have is you've a great setup underage with a lot of past players and a lot of guys that maybe weren't playing themselves, so there's a great mix, but there's huge emphasis on playing football, and I wouldn't call it a style, but it's very much just focused on the basic skills of the game, making sure everyone can kick with both feet, and I suppose allowing the skills of the game to shine through in whatever way you do play underage, that you're not always picking the biggest, strongest fellas underage, that you're picking the little corner forward as well, that has the bit of style and a bit of skill that you'd hope in years to come that he'd be able to bring that into senior levels. So there's a lot of work being done, you know, behind the scenes, and in fairness to them, they're a great team. It's very well organised, and it's great to go down to underage matches and just see the work coming through as well.
What's Colin Cooper like in the dressing room? I mean, it must be young lads coming in thinking they're overawed by this boy.
You'd have to think so. Like, there's guys we're playing with now that are on the senior team that were born in the noughties, kind of thing, which is a scary thought. And I suppose there was times when I was going up, say 12, 13, 14, you were looking up and watching Colin Cooper playing, not to mind the lads that are coming in now, 17, 18. But I suppose he treats them no different than he treats anyone else, and it's a great learning curve. You see, when during the first couple of times, I suppose you're on the dressing room and you're new to the whole thing, and Colin is talking. You know, you can see they're definitely listening to what's being said. So they're learning a lot. You know, I suppose the younger lads maybe aren't directly involved in the matches at the moment. They're more on the extended panel, but they're at all the matches. They're at training. You know, we'd an AVB last weekend, and it was highly competitive because of these guys. You know, so it's a great learning curve for them to come in and just listen up to whatever he's saying.
And Nicky, how is he around the club? Is he a bit of a character? Is he a leader? Like, does he talk much? Like, what's he like, suppose, day to day around the club?
I suppose he doesn't stand out. You know, it wouldn't be his style to be roaring and shouting around the place. He's a great man to have around the club. He does a lot behind the scenes, especially with the underage. He pops up in any Saturday he can. He's just a great guy to be around, I suppose, just from the dressing room. When he does get talking, he has that wealth of experience behind him, and he's a very good talker and a very good motivator. So when he does start talking, fellas tend to listen up.
Do you remember your first session with him or anything?
I suppose I do, yeah. It would have been back in kind of the around 2007 when they would have been training for an All-Ireland final against Glasmiglen, which they lost after replay. So a couple of us had come up from the minors, and at that time, I suppose we were coming into a team that was very much in championship mode, and himself and Owen Brazen, from my point of view as well, was a fella I always would have looked up to. So you just try and get the closest seat to the door and sneak into the dressing room and just go about your business and not get in the way when you come in first. But no, I've been lucky enough to play with him for years, and it's something we'll be hopefully doing for another few years.
And do you enjoy the midfield role more than the half-forward role, or do you have a preference?
I suppose they're very similar, really. The way half-forward, I suppose, role has evolved over the past number of years, it is quite similar to a midfielding role, in that you are in the mix for kickouts, and you are up and down the field between the 2:45s and beyond. So they both kind of pan out quite similarly. So either one at all really is a good spot to get.
Just thinking from half forward point of view, like you'd win a lot of ball, but would you prefer to be coming on to the play more than having to turn with your back to goal?
Yeah, I suppose again, a lot of time as a half forward, you kind of tend to be quite deep if you are tracking back. So you know, if you play the role that's higher up the field, that you have to be that link man. But with the club, in fairness, there's a couple of guys that play that role and play it very well. So say if I wasn't half forward line, you'd be tend to be coming onto balls anyway, as opposed to linking it up. So with the club, they're quite a similar role.
And just finally, are you happy that Eamon Fitzmaurice has stayed on? It's given you a bit more consistency and just, I suppose, an eye on next year, really?
Yeah, absolutely delighted. You know, Eamon is top class, and delighted that him and the management team are back involved. I suppose it's difficult this time of the year, you know, when you're so heavily involved in the club scene and building up to Munster final. But it's great to know that's all happening in the background, and fellas are working hard and looking forward to that as well next year. And you know, we'll be touching base as well over the next couple of weeks to make a plan. But again, from this week and the week that's in it, it's definitely very much focused on the Nemo boys this weekend.
And how far away are you from getting back to the Hogan Stand steps with the Kerry colours on?
With the Kerry colours on, I suppose it's hugely competitive. The teams seem to be getting stronger and stronger each year. But I know this year the plans are in place at the moment. There'll be one huge effort put in by everyone. So I'd be hoping we'd be close enough to getting back up there.
Thanks very much, Johnny. Okay. Yeah, great stuff there from Johnny, who's speaking at the AIB GAA Provincial Club Finals Media Day. Obviously, they're taking on Nemo Rangers. Dr. Crook's playing Nemo Rangers in the Munster final this weekend, and we also have Paul Kerrigan coming up.
Yeah, we do. We have a farm back home, so we have a big farm back home, and we have cattle and sheep, and we have a few donkeys as well. So we have a couple of filly donkeys. So I brought them down, and so we did actually sold them to. I think we had four donkeys on the day, and we sold them to a man from Wexford. So we did. So there's the piebald donkey, so there, and there's the traditional donkey, and there's the Spanish donkey, and then there's the
Spanish donkey.
You see them on the beaches, never. And so you can actually one time the donkey was useless, right? But now some people have started to get back into them because you can use them for headage, and it's used towards your bonuses, your grants. A donkey in Eden, a donkey in Eden Palace.
AIB, backing club and county.
Okay, we're going to have a look at the AIB GAA Club Championships, and what a weekend of fixtures we have coming up. They don't call it the toughest for nothing. I'm going to get a pay raise for that now. I love AIB. But anyway, on Saturday, we've got Leinster Club Intermediate Final. Here we go again, just trying to pronounce these teams. From Wexford, we've got Killinearen. Connor,
I need to see it in front of me.
Dublin Ballybuckle. I know that because I've played Ballybuckle before. That's at 2 p.m. on Saturday in Wexford Park. Also got the Ulster Junior Football Final from Fermanagh, Belnalec v Niamh Columbkill from Donegal at Healy Park in Uma, 7 p.m. And the Junior Hurling Quarter Final, actually the All Ireland Quarter Final, Brother Pierce's from Britain v Fethard from Wexford. It's in London at 1 p.m. But then Sunday is an absolute blockbuster. Starts with the Leinster semi-finals, football semi-finals. Rathnew, who beat Vincent's, are playing Murrayfield against Kildare in Ockram. Tough place to go. St. Lomans from Westmeath are playing Simonstown Gaels from Meath. That's another cracker. Like Westmeath v Meath as well. Mullingar, 2 p.m. Then we've got a triple header of finals. Of senior finals, sorry. There's Munster Intermediate. There's loads of finals. There's Munster Intermediate Football Final and Gaeltacht are playing St. Sennans from Limerick. That's at Austin Stack Park at 2 p.m. There's a doubleheader in Ulster. The Intermediate Final of Moy v Ross Trevor is on the Athletic Grounds in Armagh at 1 p.m. That's before the senior final. Slough Neil are playing Cavan Gaels at 3 p.m. Moy obviously have the Cavanagh brothers. Ross Trevor have Caelan Mooney. Like, that's going to be a brilliant intermediate clash. And doubleheader in Armagh, intermediate and senior. Like, I really recommend going to that. Slough Neil v Cavan Gaels should be a good one, but I still fancy Slough Neil to go on and do it. Like, I can't stress enough Slough Neil. Like, they only won one Derry championship ever, like 2004. Okay, that was their first ever
get
Derry
over
championship.
It, Karen, yeah.
Then 2014 comes, Mickey Moore takes over. They've won four Derry championships in a row, going for a third Ulster, probably going to go to the All-Ireland. They won't thank me for saying that, but if they get to the All-Ireland final again, it'll be the third time they get there as well. This has come from not from nowhere, because they obviously do a lot of great work, but they haven't had this history of success as footballers.
But was it a case that, like, the current Slough Neil team, was there a couple of teams coming up at underage that you're like, oh, they're going to make an amazing senior team? Or was it just since Mickey Moran has took over and done an amazing job that he's happened to transform them into the powerhouse that they are now?
This is an important thing for every club to remember throughout Ireland. Obviously they had a couple of good minor teams coming through, but their close rivals, Glen Mahara, where Mickey Moran's actually from, they were dominating minor. They were beating Slough Neil in a lot of those Derry finals. They won three Ulster minors in a row. Glen Mahara, who do have a good team now, a young team. Yeah. Connor Glass out in Australia was part of that. But they were winning most of those trophies. Slough Neil had a good team, but what they had then was you could pick out players who were coming through. You could pick out Cormac O'Doherty, Shane McGuigan. You could pick out Brendan Rodgers. You could see them coming from a mile away. Mm. And now they are superstars. It's sort of like, you look at any young team now, it's sometimes... The Derry minor team, for example, who got to the All-Ireland final, it's a good team, but you're like, right, who's the player that's really going to break through and be the standout player for Derry now? Because you don't need a good team of 15 players. You want those 3, 4, 5 individuals really that's going to fit into a new team, and that's what I think Slochnil have. Well, they also have good reserve teams in, and good hurling teams and good Camogie teams and everything else, but yeah, like,
but Moran's obviously had a massive effect on it, like the culture in general. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can Slochnil 11 absolutely, you know, you can track their identity straight away, how they want to play football. Do you know, as in, like the last day against Kilcar, I thought they were in trouble. I think it was just before half time and just after half time Kilcar got a run of them. Paddy McBurty started knocking over a couple of points, and then like 5 minutes later I think it was two goals and the game was over.
Yeah.
And they didn't register a wide until the last 5 minutes or something like that, a single wide. And like, that was a county game. If that was Dublin, you'd be raving about it, never mind a club team playing in October, like early November, in crap conditions, like, you know. Yeah. So yeah, I think they're 5-1 on, I think, to beat Cavan Gaels. Yeah. And I don't know, like, haven't watched them, it's hard to kind of determine with club teams, because I remember this time last year Carfin looked like they were streets ahead of everybody, and then they were kind of and I won't say ambush, because Crokes are really good as well, but I would say at the moment that Slochnil are probably favourites to go on and win the whole thing, just from what I've seen anyway.
What did you think of Mickey Moran at Mayo? Were you a fan of him?
Yeah, I mean, so Mickey Moran got us to Mickey Moran and John Morrison got us to an All-Ireland final, and it was just a kind of they seemed to add an enthusiasm to the setup.
Yeah,
it seemed to be, watching Mayo was fun, and you got the impression from the players at the time that playing for Mayo was fun as well. I suppose the only thing about that is that maybe we're a bit tactically lacking at times, and then got absolutely destroyed by a Kerry team who had been destroying everybody in the run up to that final as well. Do you know, but like the mood around Mayo at the time, because if you look back on that now, that period from say 2004 to 2007-08, we got to two All-Ireland finals in that time, but you wouldn't probably have called that Mayo team a great team, certainly not in comparison to the team we have at the moment. So yeah, I suppose that the two boys did really well to get Mayo as far as they did, because we definitely wouldn't have had a culture of outside managers at the time as well, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting in Derry. It was part of the 93. It was part of the backroom team of won the 93 All Ireland. The only All Ireland Derry, Eamon Coleman was obviously manager. The old rumors that circulate was that Mickey Moran gave the speech at halftime. You know, he turned things around against Cork in the final. But then he took over Derry. Had a couple of stints with Derry, but his most recent one was 2002 to 2005, I think. Something like, yeah, I think that was it. 2004, he got probably the worst Derry team ever to a semi-final, beat Leinster champions Westmeath in the quarter-final on the way. Give Kerry a bit of a game, lost by 6 in the end, but you know what he could do with bad teams was incredible. And like, I know, like, you know, he's coached me before, and like, it's just a lot of his philosophy is based on getting belief into players. Yeah. Like, and he does it. It's almost like a Martin O'Neill thing where people say he makes you feel 10 feet tall and stuff. It is like, he probably gets more out of players than what they were producing before, what they thought they were capable of. And if you're doing that with 15 players in Slochnil,
yeah, and from the outside in, he looks like a kind of a quiet, humble sort of fellow, so you wouldn't necessarily associate that with him. But I suppose you've been coached by him, so you'd have kind
and
of
I remember like that. Yeah, he's quite a lovely man. I remember once, like, I was obviously gradually moving down the pecking order and playing on a B team, and he went with us to this was at Jordanstown, and he went with us on Wednesday night out to play a club minor team in Cookstown, Tyrone, you know, and pissing down the rain, and he was out with the freshers second team at that stage, like, you know, when you're really doing everything you can just to impress this man. And I remember one time he actually flipped the lid, so effective, because he was always so well spoken and so quiet and humble.
Yeah, you knew
say.
He wasn't doing it for show. Yeah.
And then when it changed, it was like, whoa, everyone sat down and they listened to what he had to say, and they did what he had to say. Most importantly, in Connacht, Castlebar against Corrifin at 2 p.m. That's the TG Cahir live game, actually, in Tomb Stadium.
Yeah, I think I've been saying in the podcast for the last few weeks that Castlebar have just been kind of gradually getting over teams, and they haven't been kind of putting anyone to the sword at all. At the same, the Mohill from Leitrim and Turlestrand, they didn't. I think the margin of victory was something between 3 and 5 points. Nothing spectacular. So you could either read that coming into this weekend as that this is evidence that they are kind of on the wane a bit, or they're kind of just boiling nicely. And nothing is kind of going to rise them more than the challenge of Carfin, because no more than Carfin and Bridget's that we talked about lately, these teams have history as well, and there's been nothing between them the last few years too. So Carfin are strong enough favourites. They're 15-8 on, and you'd fancy them. I think they're in Tuam Stadium as well this weekend as well, which is practically their home turf. But yeah, it's going to be, I can't see there being much between them.
And the third game on TG Cahir is an all-or clinker. That's going to be on 3:30 at TG Cahir, but it's live at 2 p.m. at Parky Rin. Munster Club Senior Football Championship Final. Nemo Rangers of Cork against Dr. Crokes of Kerry. I mean, you couldn't handpick a better matchup for the Munster final there. And we caught up with Nemo Rangers' Paul Kerrigan during the week. Paul, when you look at Nemo Rangers, you just assume that you've been here so many times. But 7 years since your last Munster title, does it feel like a long time?
Yeah, it feels like a lifetime ago. I've just spoken to lads. This group of Nemo players haven't won any kind of Munster medal. There's only very few of us who played in 2010. I think there's only a handful. So kind of seems like a bit of an age, all right, yeah.
So like even just back, like you probably took it for granted almost, did you? At a younger age when it was going so well with Cork and going so well with the club, and then it just dried up a little bit?
Yeah, I suppose, like, first broke onto Nemo, we won four counties in a row. Like, so we're reaching all Ireland semis and finals, and obviously winning Munsters along the way. And then we were beaten in 2010, and obviously in 2015, last to last minute goal, and to Clonmel. I thought we were really more than well that year to have a good go off the All Ireland series, but yeah, it feels like a long time ago. We saw the cup was there a while ago. I'd actually forgotten what it looked like. So so long since I've seen it. So yeah, so there should be no short of motivation for our group at the weekend.
Yeah, and as things have just gotten a lot more competitive in Cork as well. Would you agree with that? There seems to be a lot of new clubs that are really just starting to compete.
Yeah, I think it's competitive all over the shop. Like, you know, like we play a lot of challenge games against Waterford clubs who are very, very strong. Like, and definitely in Cork, I suppose the divisions are always there. Like, there's just so many players, you know what I mean? And there's probably five really, really good teams in Cork that can beat each other on a given day. So I think it's just competitive enough, and it's just catching up. It's getting that bit more professional all the time, and people are looking for the extra edge, even in the club scene down below. So, yeah, it's competitive, all right.
So when you're looking at the All-Ireland champions and you're doing your analysis on them, what are you looking at?
Oh, I'd say we'd put 14 behind the ball. I'd say just and a bit of damage limitation. No, I suppose you look at the way Ratnew played against Vincent's. I was reading during the week, they said if they went blanket defence, they would have been beaten. So they just stuck to their own guns, whichever way they've been playing all year, and I think we'll do the same. We'll probably tweak one or two things, but we just kind of play very much attacking, possession based game, so we'll probably stick to that, and our backs are going to have to just be very tight, because they have four or five forwards. Like, there's no point in saying, oh, we'll just stick on the Gooch, we're just sticking Kieran O'Leary. They have a lot of young guys that need minding.
It's interesting because Willie on the podcast was actually those quotes from Leighton Glynn about Rathnew. He was sort of making fun of them before the game, and now he's converted. They realise that you can take these boys on man for man. And when you look at Slachneil, the way they just set up and they go at teams, and they were so close to Crokes last year, probably unlucky not to win it. So it's something that you can go out and just go at them.
Especially this time of year, like, and the pitch or the wind could be a real leveller. And if a guy's just not on form, like, and they just catch him and they're that bit hungrier, and I suppose if you can get a sniff of it, like, you never know what can happen today. Like, we played Clonmel, probably dominated for the last 20 minutes, didn't get a chance, and then third minute of injury time, long ball in, goal, game over. Like, you know, so you just never know, especially this time of year. It's nearly December, like, so yeah.
And that's probably suits your game, though, going, like, when teams go man for man, you want to be at someone on the 45, you and your marker. Is that true?
Yeah, I suppose, like, in the county final I would have been fairly well man marked, but if I had to go deep and get the ball and run it from longer, suited me fine. I suppose, look, you're always going, if you're in the county player, you're probably always going to be marked at a club game anyway. So yeah, I suppose man for man, but people are so fit now, like, they think it's not just man for man, you can run past someone, but because there's people can cover all over the place. But I think there's people are slightly, just in general, moving away from the whole blanket defence thing. Probably Tyrone didn't work against Dublin last year, and I suppose Mayo tried to match him for athletic ability, and they came an awful lot closer than having a blanket defence. So I think it's kind of starting to go full circle again.
And how's Tomás getting on?
Yeah, he's probably nursing an injury at the moment. It would have hurt his back during the summer, and it's kind of recurring. So if he touch and go for the weekend, so I'm not sure. But he's obviously a great addition for us. Like,
what was it like when he came into the change room 3 years ago? Did you give him a bit of stick or anything like that?
Yeah, I suppose. Well, he would have known a lot of our management anyway. Kind of he'd be nearly the same age as them. Yeah, and just settled in nice and quietly, played a bit of golf with the golf society. You know, his young fellas obviously in the club, so he'd know a few lads who have the kids as well. And then just is very good around match time. Like, you know, has really that just kind of fire or kind of can turn, and just is very good, knows the right thing to say to fellas and to motivate different fellas. I suppose he's like been around the block for so long. It's just, but I'd say he's enjoying it as well, like, which is important for him. So he wouldn't keep coming back if he didn't, like.
Would you remember any nuggets that he might have given you?
He's just kind of like, as if kind of an older lad, he's just saying like, if you lead and throw your shoulder to the wheel, the rest will follow. And just put him under pressure. If you can lead by example and put him under pressure and around the middle third, you know, the rest will follow. And just, I suppose I've taken that from him, to be honest with you. Do you know what I mean? And I suppose we've won two counties now in the last couple of years since he's been involved. Like, so I think two in the last three since he's come in. So he's obviously helped us an awful lot. Do you know what I mean?
And what about the Cork camp there? Are you sort of a bit removed from him at the minute?
Oh yeah, completely removed. All I know is I'm just in a general email. I haven't spoke to anyone from Cork at all. Like, I haven't spoke to anyone in the management, or I'd just be texting the boys or whatever. Like, a lot of them kind of maybe coming back in dribs and drabs from their own setup, but don't know really what's going on there. I know they're training the usual, like, three times a week or whatever. Like, so, but probably have a look maybe in December now, or see how this goes regardless, and just have a look and check in or something. But as I said, haven't heard anything.
There's a bit of familiarity there anyway with Ronan coming in.
Yeah, he would have been there under Brian. He's been impressive enough, to be honest with you. I thought he would have been, analysis would have been straight to the point, no kind of bullshit really. You know, if Phil needed calling out, called out regardless of how old or how experienced or inexperienced they were. So he's been around the block as well. You know, he's under Brian. He's obviously trained Carbery Rangers to a county, so he's been around the block, and I'd say he knows what he wants. And if fellas don't buy in, I'd say they can hit the road. Like,
and how do you assess it now? Because when you look back on it now, I know some of the grief that Cork were getting last year, but you lost to Kerry and you lost to Mayo, and that was it.
Yeah, that was it. I suppose started off, didn't get promoted from Division One or from Division Two to Division One. So then it's the end of the world, like, you know yourself. And then we go into the Munster final, and Kerry kicked their first wide after 42 minutes, like, you know, after 17 shots. And we had three goal chances after it. Like, I suppose, looking at the Kerry game in the first half, they went 4-0 up after 3 minutes, and it was a draw for the rest of the half. And then 5 minutes of the start, second half, killed us. We lost a couple of backs, probably couldn't bring in any game-changing forwards, like Colman Neal or John O'Rourke, who had good years after. And then obviously lost to Mayo again, I suppose, who had a kind of field day, kicked 27 points against us, and we were thereabouts. And geez, like, to tell me they would have went on and really nearly rattled the Ireland after that, I wouldn't have believed you, like, you know, because they were, because I thought we could have had them, like. But as I said, look, the pressure's always there, and the criticism is something that'll always be there as well.
And just finally, like, is your aim to compete for the All Ireland though, when you start out with Cork, or was it more simple than that?
I suppose Division Two, and then to be a top four team for me, like, well, in general, to be a top four team. If you're a top four team, you're probably going to be in Division One. Should be winning your provincial and knocking around the All-Ireland semi-final. Like, that's the goal that I would like to get across to guys and get them to believe in. And then if you're a top four team, you're rattling National League, provincial and All-Ireland. Like, so that's it.
That's super, Paul. Thank you very much. Okay, that's all we have time for. You'll be delighted to know that Willie is back next week. He's away this week. He's opening a restaurant in Port Leash, him and his other half, called La Lola. It's going to be a Spanish restaurant, tapas and the like, on 37 Main Street, Port Leash. It's opening on the 8th of December. I thought I'd tell you because he's too nice to tell you himself. Who am I kidding? He'll definitely be back next week telling you himself. Anyway, all the best.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.